Episode 20 of High School Counseling Conversations is a fun one. Rachel from Bright Futures Counseling invited me on her podcast, School Counseling Simplified, to talk through some sample job interview questions. I wanted to go ahead and share the exact same conversation over here on my podcast to make sure that you did not miss it. Rachel and I spend this episode giving our answers to a ton of sample interview questions from the ASCA website. Her answers come from an elementary and middle school lens, whereas mine come from the high school point of view. Our hope is that you would walk away from this episode with some new ideas, or ideas in general, for how you'd answer some of those timeless ASCA interview questions. If you like what we're chatting about and you want some more quick tips straight to your email inbox for high school counseling interviews, I want to make sure you check out my free 3-day video challenge. Sign up for that by going to counselorclick.com/interviews. I'll also link that in the show notes. Now, let's jump into this conversation where Rachel and I talk through our interview answers. I can't wait for you to hear this conversation. High School Counseling Conversations is a podcast where we talk about exactly that, a casual potpourri of school counseling topics intended to grow us as school counselors, but also give us space to enjoy each other's company. I'm Lauren from Counselor Click, and I'm sharing my experiences and perspectives as a high school counselor. No topic is off limits, and I'm certain we'll cover it all. I'm your high school counseling hype girl, here to help you energize your school counseling program and remind you of how much you love your job. Whether you're just getting your feet wet as an intern or you're nearing retirement, you'll feel like you're just popping in to catch up with your school counseling bestie. Let's go.
We decided to grab some questions off the ASCA website. So I got these straight from the ASCA website. Again, I'll link to that in the show notes so you can practice. It's a really great resource. There were a ton of questions, so we only picked some. We still have a lot, so hopefully we'll have time to get through all of them. But I thought it would be fun to do like a mock interview, and we can kind of say how we would answer the questions to give you some ideas. And that's why I wanted to have a guest on, because I thought if it was just me, you know, I don't want to be responsible for giving you your interview questions answers. But that being said, we are not experts. These are just our personal opinions and how we would answer the questions. But please don't be mad at us if you use these answers and you don't get a job. But first up, welcome, Lauren, and tell us what about your interview process, or if you have like a funny story when you were interviewing or something like that.
Yeah. Hey, Rachel, thanks for having me. I feel honored to be here a second time. So I'm super excited to talk about interviews. Kind of my background was coming right out of grad school. I had a ton of different interviews and I was ready to take a job wherever. I knew that I wanted to work in a high school, but you know, I interviewed anywhere there was a job because you can never have too much practice. So most of mine, when I got turned down from places, they were because I didn't have enough experience. So I'm sure some listeners will be able to relate to that. But when you asked about a funny interview experience, I don't know that I personally had a really funny one or, you know, something super memorable. Thankfully, I guess that's a good thing. But one of my very best friends, she was a grad school friend of mine, was in my wedding. She would not mind me sharing this, though I did not ask her permission. she was not getting a job. And it was like, she is so personable. She has never met a stranger. Like you would immediately feel warm and welcomed like the moment you meet her. And it was like, I thought it's hard to believe that you are not good at interviewing. She's like, y'all, I don't know. It has to be the only reason I haven't gotten a job. And she was like, well, this one time, she said, I want to tell you about what happened because maybe they're all like this. It's like, okay, what happened? She said, you know, when you just go into an interview and you feel like every sentence out of your mouth, it just gets worse and worse and you can't put the words back in. She's like, that's how this interview was. And she wanted to work at a high school. She was interviewing at a middle school. And so I think she was just spiraling. And she said, the absolute worst part was when she went to leave and she said there was a hallway. She like stood up to walk out of the door and they put out their hand to shake their hand. And they said, thank you for your time. It was so nice to meet you. She shook their hand and said, how are you?
Oh my gosh.
She turned away and she was like, I can't even acknowledge. Like, it was so painfully awkward. She just like continued down the hallway and was like, I'm not getting that job. I'm just not going to get the job.
Like, oh, that's pretty bad. Yeah.
But like just the awkwardness of the moment. Like, what do you do next? Just leave.
Yeah, just leave. And it's the worst when you realize that you're kind of like getting worse and fumbling, but you can't really make up for it, you know?
And I think that's what happened to her. It was like, she was just in her mind, like, this is getting worse and worse and worse. And by the time it was over, she was like, I just got to go.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That is pretty bad. Yeah. If the listeners listened to last week's episode, I shared a lot about my own personal interview experience. Again, I was interviewing everywhere and I don't need countless interviews. But I do have, I'll revisit this one story. I think I shared it last week, but it was so bad. I was in the middle of an interview and then they were like, yeah, Mr. So-and-so like couldn't speak highly enough of you. And I had no idea who they were talking about. And I was like, oh, great. I just kind of like played along. And then the other person like looked at her paper and she's like, wait, Rachel, and said like a different last name. And I was like, oh, that's oh, so no. awkward. I'm Rachel, like Watkins, which was like my maiden name. And then they're like, oh, and they look all confused. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I guess we'll continue the interview. Like, I was like, oh, right.
What? Yeah. So were you even supposed to be there? Like, what happened?
I don't think so. I think they like asked the wrong Rachel for an interview because I just applied like blindly online. Like, I didn't know anyone at the school. Yeah. So awkward. So, of course, from then on, my confidence was just like plummeted. I wish right. I could have
You're
just
like,
left
they don't even want me here. What is this?
Yeah. I feel like they already wanted to hire the other Rachel. Yeah, so that was pretty bad. And then once we had a student panel, so I had students in interviewing, which is a cool concept, but right. I just remember this one girl on the panel, her like glare and me. I'm like, oh my God, she hates me. And it was like middle
she
school.
Hates me, she doesn't even know me. Yeah, you're like, yeah. Okay, maybe I shouldn't work in a middle school because yeah. I'm intimidated right now.
Yes, I was so intimidated. Oh my gosh, it was funny. So there are definitely some funny stories there. But then I wanted to ask if you could remember. And you may not, but if from your interview, maybe like the job you currently have or most recently had, but if there was like a good interview question that you were like, oh yeah, I rocked that. So I'll share mine. It was at the job I loved when I was working as elementary school counselor at public school in San Diego. And they asked if you could have one word that describes your best quality, what would it be? And it threw me off guard because I'm like, one word. So I said determination because I feel like I'm really good at like getting things done once I'm determined. But you couldn't even just say, you couldn't even like elaborate, you know, on why.
Just give them one
yeah,
word.
Determination. So but then they said, if you could say one word to describe your weakness. And so, and you know how it is in an interview, like you want
right,
your weakness.
You want to elaborate on that.
Yeah. And you want your weakness to be like a positive weakness. Right. You know what I mean? Like, oh, overcommitting or something, you know, so like I'm doing too much. Well, I said the same word. I said determined. And then I think I did elaborate a little, but I was saying, and they kind of laughed, but I was like, well, I feel like my.
That's a creative spin on it.
Yeah. I was like, I think my colleagues kind of get, you know, maybe like overwhelmed that I'm like so determined, like working with me could be hard at times, I guess. But I don't know. Anyways, I got the job. So if you get that question, you could try that answer.
Well, a lot of times it's just like asking a question to see how well you can respond in the moment. So I had a principal that I worked for who would always ask, tell me about something you recently read. And he did not need to know that you read like the Ask a National Model book or you know, you were reading journal articles about school counseling before you walked in. He just wanted you to say something that you read. He was like, I honestly didn't care if it was a novel, if it was a tweet, if it was an article you saw on Facebook, like, tell me about something you read, like anything recently, and just tell me about it. And he was like, just hearing people think on their toes and be able to elaborate on something that they read. I mean, he was like, I just love hearing that about their personality. It's like, oh, that's a good one.
That
and that's
is
not
going to
be on the ask a list of questions, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, that's a great one. And it would be helpful, I think, in conjunction to this ask a list, maybe just to look at like general interview tips, because there probably are some questions like that, like the, you know, one word to describe your strength and weakness or like what's something you just read that you could use at like the corporate level as well.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad you're here, Lauren, because not only are you a counselor, but you have been on the other side of the panel, right? Other side of the table as interviewing people.
Yeah, not the most important person in the room, definitely. Just a person on a panel who is not going to make any final decisions, but that has been a fun experience to be part of a counseling team that gets to give some input on the interviewees. And so I've seen some good and some bad, and just, you know, I hadn't been on that side in a while. I interviewed at a bunch of places, but then I worked at the same place for almost 10 years. So I didn't have to interview after that for a long time. So it kind of put me back in my place to see people be interviewing again. And honestly, when you sent me 100 questions that we were going to talk about for this interview process, I really felt like, oh, I'm going through an interview again.
I know. I picked a lot. Well, we'll keep it casual. So no stress. Again, listeners, don't take everything we're saying with a grain of salt. Okay. So let's dive in. So like I said, I took these off the Ask A website. So they're categorized by different headings. So we'll start with role of the school counselor. And we'll both answer, but I'll just ask the question because I have it here in front of me. So we can alternate who goes first. So you're up first. Describe your ideal school counseling program. Include some specific examples of what it will include, or how does the school counseling program support a school's improvement plan?
Awesome. So I don't know how we're answering this. Like I'm sitting in the interview answering, or I'm kind of like describing how I would
answer. Describe. You can describe.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, it would really be my dream to start my ideal school counseling program like from the ground up. But most of the time, you're not going to step in getting to. You're describing the ideal situation. So specifically from the start of the school year, I would love to have a team meeting, because usually in a high school, you're working with more than one counselor, and lay out our plan for the year. Because if we don't have a plan, then we're doing everything really responsively and not proactively. So looking at data from the year before, setting some SMART goals, setting those in conjunction with the administrator's goals that they have for the school. Those are some things I'd want to include from the beginning. And we would look at where there are gaps in the school's data. So whether it is in very specific categories, like in terms of students, like maybe our English language learners are struggling in somewhere, or our special education students are struggling, we're going to notice where there are gaps in academics, attendance, behavior, and discipline. So it needs to be proactive, diligent, like just not haphazard. Like we need to go in with a plan. So my ideal program is serving students, you know, as much as we can, ideally 80% of the time, and the other 20% of the time coming up with programs or extra supports for those students in the program. So
that's great. Ideal,
yeah. That's kind of what my spitball of my ideal school counseling program. What about you?
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you started with like, this is what I'm going to do from day one. It made me come to mind, and I think I have a freebie for this we'll link to in the show notes, but I have like a 30, 60, 90 day plan, like a checklist for counselors. And that would be something cool to bring to an interview. I actually got that idea from my husband who worked in sales. He said they had to do that. Like he was asked that one time. So just kind of like in the first 30 days, I would do this, 60 days, do this, 90 days, do that. But yeah, the elementary level, I think I would just really touch on MTSS, the three tiers, and how I would plan to go into all the classes to do class lessons, then to run small groups based on referral data, based on student needs, and then to see some students individually who need more support. So I remember kind of explaining that in my interview at the job I got, and they were like nodding along, like, yeah, that's what we were looking for.
Well, and I think that they want someone who's going to come in with some direction, not like, well, the first 30 days, I need to be trained by someone with more experience than me. It's like, we just need someone with some ideas who's going to come in and be independent.
Right. And sometimes I think, you know, interviewees think the best answer is like, oh, whatever you guys told me to do, like I'm open to learn. And like, that's a good quality. But at the same time, I think they do want you to have like a clear vision.
Yes.
Awesome. We did good. Okay.
Yeah. One question. We got the job. One question in.
So next up, strengths and interests. So I'll answer this one first. Tell us about a successful or satisfying. Oh no, this one. Okay. The question is, tell us about a successful or satisfying case you've handled. One that was not so successful, what would you have done differently? So we weren't really going to answer this one because us telling you about our cases aren't really going to help you. But we were just kind of talking about this one off air earlier and how it is important to talk about times you have not been successful as well. So you can talk about, you know, a success story or a win that you had with a student, like kind of when they had that light bulb click moment and progress that they made. But it's also important to talk about a time that you struggled with a student or they didn't progress, and then how you would change it or what you could do differently. What do you think about that one, Lauren?
Yeah, I think you could also highlight all the things you tried to do, you know, to help that student. So in the high school setting, the examples that come to my mind are a student who's about to not graduate, like a senior who is, you're pulling across the finish line and it either goes really well, you worked really hard and they do graduate because of a lot of effort that you put in. Or on the other hand, they didn't graduate. And like, that's the reality. It happens sometimes, but these are all the things you did to help them. Or whether you're coming, maybe you don't have the experience of like being in a high school yet, but you saw that as an intern. I mean, you get to talk about that, about all the ways that you helped that student, even if they didn't graduate.
Yes, I think that's great. Showing that you have, you know, a plan of all the different ways that you could support students. Mm-hmm. Okay, next question. How do you handle stress? Stress is part of schools. How does the Ask a National model help you to manage it? This is like a multi-part question. And school counselors are confronted with a lot of stressful circumstances and stories. How will you maintain your professionalism and your personal wellness when confronted with these?
Yeah, I think that outside of school, obviously having balance to take care of yourself mentally, physically, emotionally, when you're not there is going to help you out when you are in school, because especially working in the high school, there are really stressful seasons. Like I can think of the times that I was most stressed in my entire life. And it was like spring when I had 421 seniors that I all needed to graduate and I would be awake at night, like stressed for them. So the way that I handle stress personally is I mean, I'm trying to get it done. I'm trying to stay organized, have a calendar, have all my to-do lists and checklists and going for the most important things first. And then I also would ask for help from people. So from my teammates, from administrators, from other stakeholders in the school who are invested in these students, I would definitely be asking for help and not trying to do it all on my own.
Yes, I think that's a great answer. Anna, you said to me earlier that you would ask in interviews, right? Like if how you could tell if your teammates were stressed.
Yeah, because everybody handles stress differently. You know, I don't want someone on my team who's going to be really mean when they're stressed, or someone who's just going to shut down and panic and not do anything. Like we are all going to run into stress. And so how will I know that you're stressed? How will I know to ask you, hey, are you feeling stressed? What can I take off your plate? So people manifest that in different ways, and some open communication would be really important in a teammate so that we can know when we can help each other out.
Yes, definitely. I love this question. I think it's important to talk about how you have your own plan for personal self-care, stress management. So, you know, you could tell them maybe like exercise or whatever you do at home to help relieve stress. But then also, I love that how you were talking about how you can, you know, have those good organization qualities or work skills that help manage your stress. So you're not going to allow yourself to get to that point of overwhelm if you can prevent it, because, you know, you are very organized, or you use systems, or you use your colleagues for support when you need help. I think those are all really good things to mention as well. And then I like the second part of the question. It's talking about hearing about your students' stressful situations and stories and how that can help you, how will you maintain your professionalism? So I think, again, just saying that, you know, as a counselor, you kind of have that filter on, you know, you have like your counselor face where you're just like, and you're just like listening very neutrally, no matter even when you're hearing like the craziest stuff. Mm-hmm. And then having that space in between sessions or afterwards, where if you need to take a break to process, that you can handle that.
Yeah. Like it's definitely okay to eat lunch outside that day that you just had like a really heavy conversation, or go for a walk around the school. Like you got to know yourself to know when you need to take a break, or you're not going to take any work home. Like you're going to go out to dinner with your partner or something to chill and get away from school. Cause we have to compartmentalize, which can be really, that can be stressful in itself. Like not being able to talk about what you experienced at work, like when you're at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have one memory. I still remember it was like in December or something. Years ago, and the student, it was like an abuse situation, and it was just really, really tough. I had both the students, and the older student had like taken pictures on her school iPad of the younger student being abused. It was just crazy. So obviously we called it, reported to authorities and everything. But it was just such a heavy day. But then that night I had plans to watch like the Victoria's Secret fashion show with my friend. And I remember like still going, I'd kind of talked to my husband about it a little bit, like on the way, cause I was just like really upset about it. He's like, we don't have to go. And I'm like, we have to go. Like we have to keep our life. Even though I was stressed, I was like determined to like maintain some normalcy and like do something normal that evening. It was just kind of a random funny memory.
That's tough to be able to separate that. I know a lot of times.
So our next one, and this question is challenging. And you and I both were like, what is our educational philosophy? But the question asked, what is your school counseling or educational philosophy? So if you, Lauren and I were just thinking, we should probably write this down in like a sentence form to have on the fly. So if you are interviewing, that might be a good idea. I think when I was in grad school, we had to write this down. But I was reflecting on mine and just, you know, be sincere and think about what you truly, you know, feel is most important. And so I would say that my educational philosophy or school counseling philosophy is to, you know, I believe in educating the whole child. And then I always like to refer to Maslow's hierarchy of needs and how it's really important that students first have their basic needs met and then their social emotional needs met before we can expect them to thrive academically. So I always like to reference that and just talk about how I think that's why the, you know, role of the school counselor is so important.
Yeah, I love all that. Because especially in high school, when they are more independent, like sometimes the parents aren't feeling like they need to provide those things like the food, the shelter, or students feel like I can walk away from that. But then when they realize they don't have all those things, then all of a sudden school starts crumbling and relationships start crumbling. But that's besides the point. I guess I would say that kind of stuff, plus just being student-centered and being an advocate for students, because I don't know, you feel for students, you hear their stories, you want to help them. And sometimes, even though everyone ideally is at the school to be on the student's team and to be helping them through to graduation, sometimes other stuff just gets in the way. And, you know, the administrator just sees the discipline side of things, or the special ed teacher is like really trying to get them to meet these goals. But there are so many other things that we get to be this aerial view, like zoom out and see the whole student, kind of that language that you were using. I love thinking about just being student-centered in everything that we do. Like if everything was stripped away or I had all the lunch duties and bus duties in the world, if I was still caring for students and making them the center of what I was doing, I think I would feel good about that.
Yes, definitely, definitely. So that was under defining your school counseling program. The next question is under the category of delivering your school counseling program. So how do you develop a positive relationship with students through individual counseling, small group counseling? And what's the role of the school counselor to student relationship in individual and group counseling?
I think just starting out, this is going to be really important. Like if you are a new person in the school, you need to be visible. So you need to be in the hallways. You need to be popping into classrooms, introducing yourself in places in a very like superficial way. Like they just need to know who you are and what your name is and where you're located. But then you get into that individual counseling and small group counseling. Like you're really going to get to know students, especially depending on how your caseload is set up. Like you might be with them for 4 years, and the more you see them in individual counseling and the more you see them in small group counseling and even classrooms, they are going to keep coming to you because you're a safe person in the school. And so just reassuring them that you are the safe person, you know, explaining to them what the confidentiality looks like, that you are really on their team, and giving them examples of reasons they can come see you. I think you're only going to see positive relationship building. I have had like tough relationships with students who just, they didn't want to be there, or they don't know why they're there, you know, just like putting up a wall. But ultimately, and I think counselors maybe don't give themselves enough credit, you're probably in this because you're good at that. Like you're good at building relationships. And this is something you can highlight in your interview, that you're good at developing positive relationships. It probably comes natural to you, whether that's in an individual setting, a small group setting, or classroom, like you have skills. And so remember that and highlight those.
Yes, that was an all-star answer. I can like barely think of anything to hire. I can barely think of anything to add to that. The only thing I was thinking that I might say differently or to add to it is just that I know sometimes, especially if you're a new counselor or first year and you're trying to, you know, you want to make sure that it looks like you're doing everything and you have all these outlines and objectives and you're, you know, meeting all these standards. But sometimes before they know you, you just need to have a few sessions where you're just simply building rapport, getting to know them, and just making that really clear that that's your goal, is to first build that relationship. And then everything else, you know, will fall into place. Not because I know sometimes I'm like that, where I have the end goal in mind. And it's like the first 5 minutes, I'm like, okay, let's practice coping strategies, you know, and it's like, whoa, let's back up a second. You know,
how it might take a lot longer than just the first 5 minutes to get
exactly. Okay. And the next category is managing your school counseling program. So I'll start with this one. How would you divide your time between meeting the immediate needs of students and keeping up with all the paperwork? How is your use of time spent to address the needs of all students? And how will you effectively plan and manage your time as a school counselor? So I love this question. I'm great. I'm really
glad
to have
you on. You're the planning queen. You got to go first.
I'll go first. And then you, it's nice to have your high school perspective because it'll probably be a little different. But yeah, I would say, and you kind of touched on this earlier, like an 80-20 thing. So we want to be delivering those services to students and we want all of our time to be spent on counselor duty. So I do think that's important to touch on the advocacy role, you know, right off the rip in your interview on how, you know, there are certain counseling duties and those are things are going to take priority and then delivering your student services are the priority. So that's your individual sessions, your class lessons, and your small groups. And then you can say how you have a plan for like in between sessions, you know, you have an organized like digital counseling log where in between sessions, you can quickly jot down your notes so as to not save it till the end of the day where it's going to take like 2 hours to catch up everything. And then you can talk about how you have a plan with your schedule. So first you'll schedule in those tier one, tier two, and tier three interventions, but then you'll have some buffer space or some space where you can schedule in like, you know, to respond to parent emails and phone calls or to do any paperwork or fill out any forms that you have to do. You know, I know a lot of times people are doing like 504s or you have like parent data forms or anything like that. But just making sure that the person who's interviewing you knows that you have a clear plan for when you're going to tackle these tasks, but that you also have the expectation that you only, you know, want to work on those counseling tasks. Make it clear that you have a huge load. You're not just this person they can like dump anything on, that you have a clear plan and a big workload already.
Definitely. That was awesome. I would say I've been on the inside of an interview when they kind of took this question, but made it a scenario. So they were like, okay, there's an angry parent in the lobby yelling to see you. You have a suicidal student in your office and you have a classroom lesson coming up. Like it's been on your calendar. Like, how do you handle it? What do you do first? And it's kind of one of those, like I said before with my principal about the reading something, like, I don't know if there is a B, C, this is how you do it. But if you can explain how you would handle it, you know, like, you're going to have another counselor come in and sit with the student in your office while you go out and explain to the parent that you are in the middle of something and, you know, you calm them down or maybe pull them somewhere else and explain, hey, we need to set up a time to meet. And then you call the teacher in the classroom and, you know, apologize, whatever it is, like pick what your plan of action is going to be and even take a second to think about it before you start word vomiting, you know, in your interview. But they do want to know that you are going to be meeting student needs. Like if you are the person who can handle the crisis, how are you going to handle it? And then it's real in high school that you're going to have paperwork. You're going to have transcripts that need to be sent or, you know, should have been sent yesterday or a scholarship deadline that you have a lot of deadlines that you do have to meet, but you have crises all the time. Everything stops for the student. And I think that that is a lot of what they want to hear, that even if it's going to take me 30 minutes after school, maybe to catch up on some paperwork or some emails, I can do that. Like, you know, I don't want to do that every day. I want to be keeping my time in check so that that doesn't happen. But if I need to, like the student is going to come first.
Right. No, I think that's so, so important. And I also, it made me think of, it's something I've talked about on the podcast before, is this is when you can bring up ideas you have for like a crisis response team. So that's something you can have in place ahead of time. So if you do have a commitment, like a class lesson or something, and then there's a, you know, angry parent or a student who's having a meltdown, there would be like an assigned designated person to kind of step in for you. So we'll try to find that episode and link to it, but I kind of talk about how you can establish a crisis response team at your school to kind of avoid these situations. But yeah, that's a great question to ask with the scenario. Mm-hmm. And then we have assessing your school counseling program. So this one's all about data. Which type of data would demonstrate an effective school counseling program? How do you use data to reflect on your program goals? And how do you use data to inform school counseling program growth? And how will you convey this impact to your stakeholders?
So I think this could be really intimidating for a new school counselor coming in. Like, I don't know what data these counselors are already using. And you can say that, hey, I don't know what your you know, what data you've used before, but this is some stuff that I might look at. So I would look at the school profile because that's, I would look at that honestly before I went into an interview because that's usually public somewhere. You can see what the graduation rate is. You can see, you know, if they have any special magnet programs at their school. You can see how many students there are. Like if you have some sort of knowledge of what the framework of the school is, like you want to have that instead of just asking like, how many students are at your school? Like, oh, you didn't do any research. So look at the school profile and you can do that ahead of time. But I would say that I would want to, like I mentioned this before, examine academic, attendance, behavior data, and then even like subgroups, and then look at how many classroom lessons are we doing and what kind of data are we getting from that? What is the graduation rate and like, how has it trended in the past? And like when you talk graduation rate to an administrator, their ears are perking up. That is very important to them. I talked about the subcategories before. So it's like if it's graduation rate and our students who don't speak English are the ones who are not graduating, like we need to do something about that. So noticing the gaps and meeting the needs. And then the second part of that you asked was about like, how do you share that data or who do you tell that to? So I would say everywhere. So website, social media, an advisory council, PTSA, open house, any opportunity that you have to share the data, you share it. And from a like veteran standpoint, like the department you might be stepping into or that you might be interviewing with, maybe they don't do data well right now. Maybe that is that kind of language. If you have a good answer to this, you could really fill a gap in their team that they're looking for. Because I think of, you know, just old school counseling, like it's not super data driven. And so you coming in as a new school counselor who is passionate about doing data, like most counselors aren't numbers people. So if you can come in and have a direction with that, that's a huge win for a team.
Yes, I love that. Absolutely. And, you know, and I was thinking for like our elementary school counselors, if they're not focusing on like the graduation rate as much, but things like the attendance rate, or those like behavior statistics, things like that. That's great. I love the idea of looking at the existing data and looking to fill those gaps. I was kind of thinking on the flip side of like tools that you could bring in, like what your plan is to measure data in your program.
And yeah, because that would give some really practical examples to them.
Yes. You could say things like, oh, right when I get there, I want to do like a needs assessment to find out, you know, where the current gaps are or where the needs lie. And then I plan on doing, you know, self-assessments before and after groups and individuals. I plan on sending behavior surveys home to parents and to the teachers, you know, to get like a full circle picture of the child. I plan to do student rating scales with the students in my sessions, like just throwing out, and they may already be doing these things, but just showing that you're like knowledgeable, you have ideas and you have a plan, I think is really great. And like you said, they may be surprised. They may be asking this because they're desperate. They need someone new, you know, who's ready to do data. And right. Then as far as conveying it to stakeholders, totally agree with what you said. Just displaying it, school website, you could, if you do like a parent newsletter, you could say you're, you know, mentioning it there, do a data wall, end of the year report, all of those things.
I would also say if you are a new person coming in, this question could sound like, well, I don't know what they already do. And I would honestly hate when someone would sit down and be like, well, you know, I don't know what you already do already. So it was almost like they were trying to back out of the question. Like, maybe I'll just say something that you already do, but kind of what you just said, it's like, then say it, let them know. Even if you're talking the same language as they're talking internally about their data, like at least you'll be on the same page as them. Be like, I don't know what you do every year or every semester already, but here are the things that I would do, and just go for it.
Yes, 100% agree. Next up is a question about leadership. So how do you see the word leader fitting into your role as a school counselor? How do school counselors model leadership? And how is leadership a part of the school counselor's role in schools? Where can school counselors be leaders? Now that I'm reading these out loud, I'm like, okay, these were like four questions per question, but basically leadership. So yeah, I think it's really important just to say how the counselor, I was thinking leadership in terms of, obviously we want to be a good model to our students, but I was thinking in terms of staff. So the first thing that came to my mind, which I wouldn't actually say this part in the interview, but just to kind of paint a picture, is, you know, how like if you're in the staff lounge and the conversation can get like kind of toxic in there, like talking about kids and stuff. So I think just as a school counselor, you know, modeling just kind of that like restraint and confidentiality and modeling how we want to be a good example to our students and to our colleagues. And then just being a leader in terms of like, making changes at the school. So you can reflect on that previous question. So using any data that you've collected to, you know, make changes in the program. So you're not afraid to see like what's not working and then to use the data to make the appropriate changes. So that would be a way that you could assume a leadership role as well.
Yeah, using your leadership abilities to advocate for your students and your program, that's huge. Like not being afraid of, you know, showing an administrator something and saying, hey, I think this needs to change. And yes, here's the data that I have to prove it. I also thought along those lines of, you know, keeping that confidentiality, like being professional and showing that we do abide by our ethical code, you know, that ASCA puts out there, because I think it's easy for teachers to be like, well, just tell, you know, tell me what's going on.
Yes.
And I want to be an advocate for the student. And I have had to have hard conversations and say, hey, when the student is ready to tell you, or if they're ready for me to tell you, I will, but just trust that like we're handling it. And that's really hard to be a leader like that in terms of your confidentiality and like your professionalism, but it's really necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's exactly what I meant, because those conversations are tough. So important to maintain that professionalism.
And then I just think like professionalism in terms of like you're in an IEP meeting, you're showing up on time, you're prepared, you know, you're speaking at open house. Like if there is an opportunity to be in front of people to advocate for your role, like you want parents to see you as a leader in the school and as somebody that they trust. So any opportunity where you can show, where you can demonstrate that you're a leader, like do it, take advantage of it. And then one other thing, I think that like being a good teammate on your team, like of school counselors, also shows leadership. Like you can say something like that. Like you might not be the person who wants to speak in front of a large auditorium or something, and that's okay. But you're still willing to be a leader amongst your team in the way that you work hard or fully like finish your job or take responsibility. Like when other people don't want to take responsibility or something bad happens and you just own it. Like that's being a leader too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Demonstrating that responsibility. Definitely. So under advocacy, we've kind of already touched on this, but how do the school counselors advocate for students differently than other school staff?
Yeah, I thought of an example in this where I had an administrator who was just, he was over the student. Like she was weeks away from graduating and she got in his face and she started yelling at him. And I was like, I'm watching this, like, oh, this is not going to end well. And then she stormed out. She like walks out of school and he stormed out and he's yelling at her. And I was like, what do I do in this moment? I sent him back inside. This is like awkward too, because he is like a leader to me too, but I'm like, okay, y'all both need your space. And I go and I have a good relationship with the student, and she's rough around the edges. Like she has pushed a lot of people away, but for some reason she would listen to me. So calm her down. And then he kind of went his way for the afternoon. And then he came back to me later and was like, hey, I'm really sorry I acted like that. And I said, I think you need to apologize to her too. And like, I mean, like just, he was coming forward saying like, hey, I shouldn't have acted like that. And I was like, I think you can still earn that relationship back with her. Like she knows that you care about her. And like, I had to be like the peacekeeper, but also the advocate for the student too. Like I was like, hey, you need to let this go, because do you want to suspend her? Because she's about to graduate. And like, you didn't think she was going to graduate and she's made it. So like, let's come together.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think that's showing leadership as well. So that's a perfect follow-up question. Yeah. I think, yeah, with the advocacy piece, like you were saying, you just know that student on a more personal level. You know, of course the teachers have a class of 20 or 30, or if they're at the high school or middle school level, more than that, you know, they have six classes of that many. So just, you're able to advocate for the students on that personal level because you know them really well from that one-on-one. So I think that's how you can do that differently than the other school staff, like the administrator, like you were saying.
Yeah. And you can kind of take a deep dive, you know, if your day needs to be committed to helping the student, like you can do that because you don't have a classroom of 35 other kids. So that it's like a way that we really get to care for kids differently than other school staff. Like, obviously my day is I'm not going to get everything done if it's all dedicated to one kid. But if I'm I also thought of a kid who their special ed services were like messed up, or the parent had denied services a long time ago. And I felt like an investigative journalist. Like I was going back through paperwork, and the special ed teacher wanted to help, but it was like, she couldn't stop her day and dig like I was. I'm like, okay, here's what I found. Now I'm going to like pass it off to you, but that we get to work together. But counselors have a really unique way that we get to advocate for students.
Yes. So I think you went first on that one, but I'm going to have you go first again because I want to go first on the next one. Yeah. Looking ahead. But so I'm going to let you pick. This is like a choose your own adventure, both regarding parents and collaboration. So how would you address either an irate, that's your option one, irate parent, or option two, passive and uninvolved parent? Which one do you want to answer?
Okay. The irate parent is more fun. You get that in high school all the time. Not fun in the moment, more fun to talk about, right? Okay. So I would say when I saw this question, I laughed because it is common. Like I had an intern one time who heard a voicemail on her first day that a parent left me. And it's still the worst voicemail, meanest voicemail I've ever received in my whole life. And the intern was panicked. She was like, does this happen all the time? I was like, no, not this bad, not this bad. But, in that case, I mean, the worst one of all time was sent to my principal and he returned the call and was like, you can't talk to anyone on my staff like that. So, you know, sometimes when you realize this is outside of my realm, somebody else needs to step in and, you know, things are taken care of that way. But I would say, you know, if someone calls on the phone and they are angry, because that does happen, just using your counseling skills, listening and reflecting what you're hearing, like, I am so sorry. It sounds like you're really frustrated about this situation. Like you can hear it in their voice. And I always would reassure a parent that, you know, we're on the same team. I want to see the best for your son or daughter. Like, I really hope that we can come to a resolution on whatever the situation is. I don't know that I've ever had to do this, but I have a colleague who definitely has hung up on a parent before, but not after, you know, she was very calm, had a lot of grace and poise and said, you know, I really want to continue this conversation, but I cannot if you're yelling like this. So we could either meet in person or you can call me back when you've had some time to think about this and, you know, in a really calm voice telling them, I would love to talk more about this, but I need to do that when we're both more calm. And, you know, if they continue to yell, like, hang up. I've not had to do that before, but I know someone who has because we don't get paid enough. I say that is above my pay grade to be
right
sitting on the phone, having someone screaming at me.
Yes. No, great answers. The other thing just to add on that I was thinking is if it is, I was thinking in person, you could always, you know, ask someone to come in with you. That way it's not just like one-on-one battling. Yes.
You so need you could, a witness.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So you could ask like your admin or, you know, if you have a co-counselor or someone just to like, one moment, let me see, I'm going to have them step in. Maybe they can help us resolve this or something. And maybe they can't help you resolve it. But if not, maybe they can just kind of like diffuse the situation or be a buffer or a witness, like you said.
Yes, definitely. And sometimes you know who those people are, you know, they're most likely not just going to storm in angry and you've never met them or heard of them before.
Right.
Like, you know, someone who just comes in hot headed all the time and like, okay, we're going to schedule a meeting. I'm going to make sure my administrator is there as well.
Yes. Yes. Or you can always like CC them on those nasty emails.
Oh yes. Yep.
Okay. So the next question, the one I said I wanted to answer, cause I thought of a specific case that came to mind, but how do you see yourself fitting in with school counselors who have many years of experience as veteran teachers? What strengths do you bring as a new school counselor to the department? So now that I just read this out loud, I think I did misread it when I was reading it in my head, but I was thinking of you joining a team where there's veteran teachers, because I've never really been on a counselor team. It's like always just me typically. So I'll answer that way. I know you work on a counselor team, so we'll let you answer that part. But I was thinking of when I worked at this primary school and the staff had literally been there, oh my gosh, forever, like 40 years, because they had students who they had been their parents' teacher.
Like, wow.
Like that was very common. They're like, oh, I taught your dad, now I'm teaching you. So it was like, they were old school and it was the same. They had all worked there forever, like very small turnover, which is great. But they had the principal and the counselor both left the year before. So I was the new counselor and there was a new principal. So it was like, whoa, we were like disrupting their ecosystem. They're really nice, but they had just been doing the same thing for years. So this one, the principal actually came to me and wanted to like completely redo the class lessons. And he wanted to base them all on this new book curriculum and like not on second step. He like had this book. It was from John Wooden's like Pyramid of Success. And he's like, we're going to do the pyramid. He's all pumped on it because he's new and I'm new. I'm like, great, let's do it. So he's like, can you introduce it at the staff meeting? So I'm like, sure. So I go in and I'm like, this is what we're going to do this year, everybody.
Oh, you were the sacrifice.
Yeah, I know. And it's messed up. And then they were like, wait, what? And it was like not received well there. We've been doing second step forever. That's what the old counselor did, blah, blah, blah. So I ended up like, so I would say just be like, have your new ideas and, you know, be confident in your ideas, but also you need to be respectful, you know, to the people who have a lot of experience, you know, and don't just completely shut them out. Like, oh, well, they haven't been to grad school in 20 years, you know, like listen to them because they have years and years of experience that you don't have. So we ended up compromising and I was able to like integrate, like keep the topics from the pyramid of success, but use like the methods of second step. Like there were some lessons that overlapped. So we'd still do like the songs and stuff from second step, but to reinforce these other topics. So that was just an idea that came to mind. And it did just take some time, honestly, and like some warming up. So I would just say, go in slowly, you know, don't be like too cocky right off the rip. yeah, navigate those situations with grace. But I am interested in knowing if you have worked, now that I read the question, with counselors who were previous teachers, and you like, you were not a previous teacher, correct?
No, I was not. So right. I don't know. I don't think that, you know, I'm picturing counselors who are, I don't think that they would be like, oh, you weren't a teacher. Like we're all counselors now.
Right.
So I don't know. I guess I was interpreting this question, like if there were all these veteran counselors on a team, mm-hmm. like how are you going to come in and you can't match their years of experience. So like, what are you going to bring to them? And I mean, to me as like a new school counselor, like I'm excited to learn from you. You have years that I don't have, that you have wisdom and just all the experiences. And I think veterans, they discount themselves for all of that. Like they don't think that it's as valuable as it is. And then just reassuring them that as a new school counselor, like you're coming in, I'm coming in with energy and excitement and new ideas, which is hard because I think that can be interpreted as rose-colored glasses. Like, mm-hmm. yes, you want to come in and have this ideal school counseling program. So like you said, knowing that, I mean, you can have ideas, but it's probably not going to change for at least a year or two. I mean, a year to figure out the school and then another year to like kind of figure out what might work or whatever, but your high energy level and your commitment to learning and growing and incorporating yourself into the school and like what all the good things that are already going on, like that's huge. That's something you want to highlight. And this is me personally, but like I am just a positive person. So I'm not going to like sit there and be like, oh, this is, I just have all this excitement because I'm brand new and it's going to fade away. Like what you're seeing right now is what you're going to get. So if you want that, like, great, I'm a good fit. But if not, like, I might not be the best fit. But
right.
Also know that like, if you get hired, and maybe this is like past the interview process, but if you get hired and that's who you are the new school counselor, like be confident, because I know that on the other side, like there were some years where that's what we were looking for. We were looking for someone brand new who was going to be there for a long time, who is going to bring some energy and new ideas. And then there were other years where it was like, we need someone who's just a really good teammate who has like done this day in and day out. And you can trust in like those crisis situations. Mm-hmm. And like, you're not really going to have to train them that much. Like different years, you need different things to fill your department.
That's such a good point. And then I was thinking, if it is a counselor who was a previous teacher, yeah, ask them about, you know, they probably have that like classroom management piece mm-hmm. and wisdom that we don't necessarily have. So yeah. Definitely tap into that. Okay. Now onto the fun questions, and then we're going to wrap it up. So these are like, what would you do?
Yeah.
So, well, they're not fun. I'm going to read them.
And I'm like, okay, this is about to be not a fun question.
Okay. But they're not fun at all. They're actually horrible, but I'm just the, what would you do? I like that type of question.
Right.
Okay. So what would you do if one of your students talked about wanting to kill himself or herself?
So all of these questions that you have listed here, administrators always ask, because I think they're panicked obviously to like handle a situation like this, but everything that you're about to ask like happens all the time. So, you know, you just give your protocol of like what your experience has been, because it might vary from school to school. So for this one, I would say it is always taken seriously. Like this happens a lot in high school, even if it's just a joke, like I'm going to follow up with whatever the school's protocol is. So in my past experience, that has looked like remaining calm and reassuring the student that they did the right thing to tell you, or if it's a friend, that the friend did the right thing to tell an adult and like a safe person. I would ask a lot of questions like, do you have a plan for killing yourself? Do you have access to whatever that plan is? And then, you know, probably before we've gotten even this far, I've already told them about the confidentiality in my office. And then we get to a point where I tell them, hey, this is bigger than you and me. Like, I need to bring some other people into this situation to make sure that you stay safe. And I'm going to stay with the student until we have like seen this all the way through. So it could be all day, especially if a parent doesn't answer the phone or something like that. So the student is going to stay in my sight. I'm going to let the appropriate people know, like maybe if there's a mental health counselor on campus, a school resource officer, I would follow up with the principal if they're someone who is needing to know about that. But I would call the student's parents immediately, let them know, hey, you need to take your student to the hospital. I'd call ahead to the hospital, let them know that they're coming. If a parent is against that, if a parent doesn't answer the phone, sometimes this doesn't go as smoothly as you pick up the phone, they answer, they come get their kid. Like the student might sit there all day because the parent is at work, or sometimes the family doesn't speak English. And I mean, that happens and it can be really stressful as a counselor, but you're just thinking, stay focused on the student, keep the student safe and get them the help that they need.
Yes. Yes. And I've even had parents, because listeners might be thinking, what do you mean the parent doesn't answer and show up right away? But a lot of times if the student has, you know, said this before at home, a lot of times, sometimes they're not taken seriously. Yeah. So yes, I agree. Super heavy question, but an important one that you need to be prepared to answer. And again, it is going to vary on school protocol, but I would say something like, well, I would follow the school's threat assessment. If the school didn't have, you know, one, we would develop this during my, right when I start, I want to develop a threat assessment process where we would go through, and on the threat assessment, it'll say things like that list of questions that you'll come up with your team to ask, like, do you have a plan for carrying this out? And do you have the means, you know, to carry this out? Did you say this like in a joking way? All of those kind of questions that are hard to come up with in the moment. So just having that clear threat assessment plan that you would go through those questions and then you would take necessary next steps. So, you know, calling the parent, getting an administrator involved, depending on the severity, it may be like they're getting admitted to the hospital. You know, that's happened before.
I would say if a student did say it like as a joke, I still call the parents and the kid is sitting right there with me because like we all need to know that this is not a joke. And right. I guarantee they won't be doing that again.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. The next question, what would you do? And I'll start with this one. One of your students tells you that they're being abused. So again, I would say in your interview, you know, that you're a mandated reporter, so you'll likely go through some kind of mandated reporter training early on. But then it's your responsibility that you're going to report that to authorities and then take the, you know, next steps. So again, just, you're going to have a plan. So I don't want you to feel like super overwhelmed that you're not going to know what to do when these things come up, because the school likely already has like a process in place, but you want to make sure that you're learning what that process is. If they don't have one, you're helping them to develop that process. And then, you know, again, just letting the student know that yes, confidentiality is the rule in your office, but there are exceptions to the rule. Like if someone's being hurt, if they're hurting someone, if they're getting hurt, things like that. What about you, Lauren?
Very similar. I would say very similar to the suicidal threats. I'd ask a lot of questions and let the student know that I have to let others into this conversation. We in our district have like a Department of Social Services, a DSS form, and I'm familiar with that paper. So I kind of know the questions I need to ask that they're going to ask me on the phone and then I'm going to need to fill out, like, even like, are there any other siblings that are in this family or in the home? Like, how old are they? What school? Because, you know, I'll be stuck on the phone. Like, hey, what school do they go to? Like, I gotta know those things ahead of time. But once I call and report it and fill out the paperwork, then I would make copies for our resource officer and principal and keep that in a safe place, like in a locked folder. And then I usually tell the students that, hey, someone's probably going to come follow up with you, you know, at school. So don't be like surprised if someone calls you down and you like go talk in a conference room or something. But these are people that are here to ask you questions and keep you safe. And then they'll also ask on the phone too, like if home is not a safe place, like we're going to come up with an alternative plan, or DSS is going to act faster. Unfortunately, there's a lot of turnover in DSS and, you know, with caseworkers and stuff, and things seem to move very slowly. So, you know, if it is a very serious situation, like, you let them know that and they'll move and act quickly on it.
Right. And I think you touched on this with the suicide one, but I think it's important, again, to tell the student that they did the right thing by telling you that, you know, they're not in trouble at all. They definitely did the right thing. You're there to support them. You just really want to stress all of those things.
Yeah.
And definitely talk about those next steps if you know what they're going to be.
Yeah.
Okay. So now I'm off the hook. It is just you. I have three questions for high school. Do you want two or three? Are you tired?
Oh, I don't care.
Questions?
I don't care. Okay.
No, for high school only, because these just are more for you. And then we'll wrap it up. So, okay. First step. A student says a teacher doesn't like him or her and requests a teacher change.
So this happens all the time. Depending on the policy at the school, your answers are going to vary. And this might be something that's kind of hard to figure out when you're interviewing. So you could either base it on, you know, what it was like at your internship, or I think most of the time it's going to be a very similar thing that I have to explain that I have to do what the procedures are at my school. So it definitely, this kind of conversation turns into more of like an individual counseling situation. If the student has like come in and, you know, I tell them like, hey, we don't change classes, like, just for teacher preference, not just, this is a big deal to them, for teacher preference, but like, I'm happy to listen to your concerns and we can see what we can do about that. Because sometimes it's like, they don't like me, or sometimes it's, I don't like their teaching style, or most of the time it's like, my friends are in a different class, or I heard this teacher is really hard. So really kind of trying to like uncover the why we need to change teachers. I would change a student's teacher if they have had that student, or if they've had that teacher before and they failed the teacher's class. Like, that's not fun for either one of them. And so if that is an option and they need to take the class and there is another teacher, I would always try and make that an exception to that rule. But you really have to stick with it. Like, you cannot change one kid's schedule, even if he says he's not going to tell his friends, because he's going to tell his friends. So right. You really have to decide, you know, if this is a rule at your school, like, we can't change it just because of a teacher, but we can talk about like, what else could we do to make the situation better? Is it, you know, you need to figure out how to come under their teaching style, or this is great practice. Ultimately, I usually leave this at like, this is great practice for your future, because I might work for a boss that I don't see eye to eye with, or I might be part of a team where I don't like, you know, the other people I'm working with on the team, or like, we work very differently. So it's good practice right now. And they don't want to hear that, but, but usually we have to like spin it to like, you're staying in this class, so how can we make this better?
Right. Right. And yeah, like you said, if it's, you're still willing to work with them, like if it's the learning or teaching style, you know, maybe chatting with the teacher that they're concerned about that, and then possible accommodations or something.
Yeah.
And what about if it's a parent, that, what if a parent asks you to switch their child's teacher?
Yeah. So I thought that conversation with the student usually turns into a phone call from the parent, like later that afternoon, like they've texted their mom and then their mom calls you. And then I would say like, hey, yeah, we did get a chance to talk. Like, was he able to tell you, you know, about our conversation? Because it might be the same day and like, they haven't actually talked about it. It was just, she wouldn't change my schedule kind of thing. So ultimately, like, I kind of share, I'll tell the student, you know, or I'll share with the parent, like, these are our policies and this is why I couldn't change it. And this is kind of what I said we could do or could concentrate on. And if they still insist on wanting it changed, I just tell them, okay, like, my hands are tied as it is, because these are the procedures like that come from above me. So if you want to talk to someone higher up, I'm happy to give you your grade level administrator's phone number, email, and you're definitely welcome to reach out to them. And I usually do warn them. I say, I'm going to warn you, I don't usually see it change, but you're welcome to start that conversation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they already see me as the bad guy because I won't change it right then and there. But our administrators were usually very supportive of us. They were, because like, we all have to be in agreement that these are the rules. And so I would say, usually with confidence, knowing like, it's not going to change, but you're welcome to go talk to someone else if you want. Like, you don't need to be mad at me. You can go like, be mad at the administrator, I guess.
That's great. Really good answer. Okay. Last one. One of your students wants to drop out of school, or your seniors is not going to graduate. What would you do?
Ooh, this is so good. So again, this happens all the time. when they want to drop out of school, I would say there's usually a lot more to this. Like, they didn't just come to your office and just decide this one day. Like, maybe there are things going on at home. You can ask questions about, like, how is school going? Like, what do you like and what don't you like? Who are your friends? Like, are there good parts of coming to school, or is, like, all of it terrible, and why? Or what are you doing when you're not at school? Like, are you working to provide for your family? Like, sometimes that's a very real thing and a very real need. And so kind of understanding who the student is and why they're saying they want to drop out is important. I would look at how close they are to graduation, like, because then you can frame it. You have been in school since kindergarten and you only have one more semester left. Like, you are so close. And they don't realize, like, hey, I have put in a lot of work to this. I think also, like, framing the opportunities for them once they graduate high school, like the doors that are going to be open, or, you know, on the other side, like, doors that are going to be closed, or like things that are going to be harder because they don't have a high school diploma, really, like, putting that into perspective. But I understand that, like, when you do have a lot of stuff going on, that can be really hard to see. If they're young enough and it's not like, you know, maybe they're in 9th or 10th grade and they're saying this, maybe there's an opportunity to explore a career center or, like, some sort of vocational skill or hands-on technical skill that they could be up and moving for half of the school day and get elective credit for it. Then when they graduate high school, they have a certification, they have a job, they're making more money than I am. Like, they could be in a really good place if they find something that really anchors them to school, like something where they're gaining real world skills. And then their motivation is newly sparked again. And then if we're getting to the end and a senior is, like, looking like they're not going to graduate, I mean, you're doing everything you can to keep them in school and to get them across that stage and get them their diploma. So really, you want to make sure, I think this is the most important part to highlight, is that this is not a surprise. When you get to the end, like, we would always talk about between counselors and administrators, like, no surprises. If there are people that you're worried about, like, you're in constant communication with their teachers, their parents, the administrator that's over them. Like, we are bringing in parents. We're trying to have meetings. We're telling the student, this is what you need to do to graduate. And ultimately, there will be students who don't hold up their end of the bargain and they don't graduate, but none of it should be a surprise. And I hate to say, like, there are students who won't graduate, and that's really hard to do, or, like, to come to grips with when you're used to helping students, but you're collaborating with so many people that it will come down to them doing the work. And you want to have no surprises, and you're going to be exhausted by the end, but knowing that you did everything you could to get them to graduate is all you could ask for.
Yes, I think that's perfect. You sound like such a good counselor.
Oh, you're sweet. That could have been his whole podcast episode. Me giving, like, a monologue about getting a kid to graduate.
You should do it on your podcast. Awesome. Oh. Awesome. Well, thank you, Lauren. This has been fun, and I hope helpful for the listeners.
If you enjoyed this conversation with Rachel and I want to give you one more free resource. Head to counselorclick.com/interviews to get a 3-day video challenge for free straight to your email inbox. Inside these videos, you're going to find powerful tips for interviewing for those high school counselor jobs with confidence. I want to read you a quick little message I got from Michaela in my Instagram DMs. She said, "Hi, Lauren. I just want to let you know I accessed your high school counseling interview series in preparation for an interview I had today. They opened up with 'Tell us about yourself,' and I think I nailed it. Your series and podcast with Rachel on the Ask a Sample interview questions made me feel super confident, and that's all I can ask for at the end of the day. Just wanted to pop by and say thanks." Well, thank you, Michaela, for letting me know about that. And you are not the only one who has nailed the interview process after listening to this podcast and using the 3-day free video challenge. So go to counselorclick.com/interviews to get that video challenge to your email inbox today. Good luck. Thanks for listening to today's episode of High School Counseling Conversations. All of the links I talked about today can be found in the show notes and also at counselorclick.com/podcast. Be sure to hit follow or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast so that you never miss a new episode. Connect with me over on Instagram. Send me a DM at counselorclick. That's CLIQUE. Thanks so much for hanging out with me. I'll see you next time.